This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. The life of an indie musician, particularly indie musician Alina Simone, is anything but ordinary. She released an album sung entirely in Russian. She's attended a male strip show in Siberia. Oh, there's more. But now she's breaking new ground as an author. Alina's first book, You Must Go and Win, came out in June and chronicles her crazy adventures through the world of music. She also released a new album that month, Make Your Own Danger. It's a record influenced a bit by her time in North Carolina. Oh, yeah, and she just had a baby. Alina Simone is going to be in Raleigh tonight at Quail Ridge Books. She's with me in the studio now. Welcome back, Alina. Good to have you here.
Thanks, Frank. Great to be here.
Your book, You Must Go and Win, your first foray into writing. What made you write it?
Well, actually, it's a really strange story because an editor at Farrar, Straus & Giroux heard my music on Pandora and literally sent me an email out of the blue asking if I'd like to write a book. And I'd never published anything before in my whole life.
Heard the music, said, where's the book?
Yeah. I was like, where is the book?
And the music, by the way, was in Russian. I mean,
that album hadn't come out yet. It was Yanka. Even before okay. that. Yeah, it was Placelessness. And I was living in North Carolina at the time. So I'd been touring and I'd just driven from New York City from like some shows that weekend. And it was 1 a.m. I got back to Carrboro and I checked my email and I had this bizarre email from this editor that was very rambling and like, I just heard your music and, you know, I have your CDs. And I was just thinking, maybe you'd just like to write a book for us. And then I literally thought maybe it was some weird crank. And then I got on MySpace, which at the time was a thing.
I remember that.
Yeah, vaguely. I have recollections of that. And back then, musicians got a lot of bookings through MySpace. And I was touring all the time. So I checked it because I got quite a lot of inquiries through my, you know, email on that account thing. And so I went into MySpace and I started checking my email. And then this little head popped up like, you know, and I got another email being like, hey, are you there? It's me. I'm online. I just emailed your other account. Will you write a book for us? And I was like, good
Lord. So you find
out
he's not a stalker. He really is a publisher. He really wants a book.
Yeah, it took me a while to ascertain he wasn't a stalker. That was a concern. Yeah. I was like, are you really serious? This is like, you know, I've never written anything or published anything. So yeah, he just kind of heard the music and thought that I should give prose a shot.
Was it the storytelling in the songs, do you think?
You know, he maintains that it was more just the atmosphere of the music, but I'm sure the lyrics are, you know, he must have been going on something. I guess I should drill him kind of more closely on that because it is so odd. But it took a long time. It was sort of over the course of a year. We got together a few times and he asked me to try fiction and I wasn't very comfortable with that. And he's like, well, why don't you just try writing something that really happened?
His intuition was great. This is a very funny book. It's a very insightful book, I think. And I want you to talk about some of the essays. First, the first essay in the book, tell us a little bit about Cozumel Truth. It's a story about an interview with your hometown newspaper. So before we talk about that, we should mention that you were born in Ukraine, at that time the Soviet Union, left when you were a baby. So first tell us what you knew about your hometown before you got this email.
The city where I was born is Kharkiv, Ukraine. Then it was part of the Soviet Union, and I left when I was very little. I was a year and a half, so I didn't remember anything. To me, it was just a totally abstract concept and mostly cobbled together from my parents' recollections of it, which were totally apocalyptic. So, you know, as far as I knew, it was like the worst place in the world, just like a horrible, horrible hell on earth. That was my perception of it. You know, everything I heard was like, oh, it's dirty and it's horrible and it's industrial. And so I had a very, I think, inaccurate perception of it.
Your family driven out by the KGB.
Yeah. My family left the Soviet Union as political refugees. They had a really hard time there. So I understand, you know, their perception was colored by their experiences there. Not everyone feels that way about.
But a lot of the details of that flight were unknown to you. Your father only made it clear from reading the essay itself, that he didn't want to be known as some kind of political hero, some kind of Superman dissident.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, my father, it's not like he was protesting at, you know, City Hall every day. He was recruited by the KGB in college. They approached him because he was a scientist. He's a physicist now, and his English was pretty good. And these were two things that the KGB found valuable. And so they offered him a job, and he said no. And, you know, what's funny is, like, I think back now, if the KGB knew my dad, they would know they were making a really bad, you know, H&R decision there. Like he would be an atrocious KGB agent. He's just like a really mild-mannered scientist and a very sweet guy. And I don't think he'd get the job done. But nonetheless, they were very upset with him and they blacklisted our family. So it wasn't so much that my dad was like out there, you know, waving flags. He just didn't want to do this. And after that, you know, things went very poorly for my family, and he wasn't allowed to go to grad school, and he wasn't allowed to publish, and he wasn't allowed to really have a real job. So he worked this series of pretty strange and depressing jobs, including one as a night watchman at the city zoo. So he had, like, a gun, and he, at night, like,
trying to keep the animals in or the drunks out, or maybe
believe it or not, people stole animals, which is, like, and my dad, like, because there were, like, food shortages. And so my dad was, like, you'd think that, you know, well, there was some kind of partridge or something that some kind of a deer, I don't know, a sheep or something that they would want to steal and eat. But my dad said that, like, they stole an eagle. And he was just like, is someone out there eating an eagle? Like, that seems unlikely. He never really could figure out why the zoo needed such harsh security, but maybe the zoos here all have a watchman.
Yeah,
maybe it's just sort of standard operating procedure.
Well, anyway, you get this email now from the post-Soviet Union newspaper wanting to do a profile of the town's rock star made it big.
Right. They kind of had a skewed perception of how successful I was. And they were like, we want to write an article about you. And I was just kind of floored because nobody from this place had ever contacted me, and I had no idea they knew I existed, much less what I was up to.
It's a delightful essay. I want you to read from a different one, though. I know you brought your book with you. Set this one up for us. Set this reading up for
us. Okay. Well, this first one is from a chapter called Gloom Deflecting Mailmen Warrior Gods, which is just a part of something that's written on the a famous saying that's written on the post office building in Manhattan. And it's just a very uplifting statement about mail and the people who deliver it. It was something I kind of used to bolster my spirits as a mantra. And I needed it on this particular occasion because when I first moved to New York City, I was actually living in Hoboken, but my days were mostly spent in the city. This was before I lived in North Carolina. I went on a lot of these Craigslist auditions because I didn't know what to do. I'd never been in a band and I really wanted to sing. And, you know, there'd be these really enticing looking ads like, you know, call me and let's be famous together or something.
Yeah, that'll work.
You know, and you basically the chapter to me is about the fact that there really is no shortcut. You know, if you want to be an artist, there's really no way you can just push a button. No magical person is going to descend from the sky. It's very rare that you get, quote unquote, like the phone call or the show or get discovered.
But this particular Craigslist ad did capture your attention. This producer, you think, is going to do it for you.
Well, yeah, this producer seemed remarkably sane, and his ad was actually fairly well written, and he seemed impressive, and like he had all these things going on, and the address was in Soho on this very fancy street, not, you know, some person's apartment. So I'm thinking, okay, you know, this is sort of what happened when I arrived at the studio. I'm not going to like read the whole thing, but so here I go. The studio was in one of those expensive and painfully maintained Manhattan buildings that always look wholly deserted. It was raining the day of my audition, and I'd made the unfortunate decision to eat a croissant along the way, only to notice once I reached the door that it had flaked down the front of my black jacket. I pawed at myself uselessly for a moment, realized it was hopeless, then rang the buzzer for the second floor. Within a moment, the speaker crackled and a clipped male voice came at me. "Is this my 11 o'clock?" "Yes." "Are you the Ricky Lee Jones one or the Annie Lennox one?" "I... sorry? Second floor." Then the door sang its flat note and there was nothing left to do but open it. As I stood inside the doorway, wondering what to make of this exchange, a familiar sensation began to creep over me. Let's call it hope slippage. The quick drop of pressure when oversized expectations are ratcheted down, violently and without warning. "This is going to be bad," a voice inside my head whispered. "Run away while you still can." But I didn't run. I went upstairs, feeling grateful that at least the hallway wasn't mirrored. Should I stop there?
That sounds good. Alina Simone reading from her new book, her first book, You Must Go and Win. She's going to be at Quail Ridge Books in Raleigh tonight at 7:30. She's on the show today. You didn't get the gig.
No. To put it mildly.
Suffice it to say. So you've got the book. Then the new album came out, Make Your Own Danger, and you decided to release them at the same time.
Mm-hmm, same day.
Kind of crazy, huh?
Yeah, just a kooky kind of gal.
Tell us about that, about what that's like to have a book and an album come out the same day.
Well, I mean, the book was about my music. It seemed kind of like an organic choice. And just to any, you know, just from the sort of the businessy perspective, nowadays, if you're an author or a musician, you know, or a visual artist or anyone trying to sort of put your art out into the world, it really helps to somehow distinguish yourself, and it doesn't need to be, you know, releasing two different things in the same day, but sort of anything you do that's different and shows that you've put some effort and some thought into your release. Because if you put yourself in the shoes of the journalist, like, they're looking for something to write about that's, you know, a little bit unique. And so if you can sort of provide that spin for them in a way that's organic and makes sense, that'll just make your job a lot easier and make it a lot more likely that people will catch on to what you're doing. So for me, it meant just holding on to my album for longer until the book was ready to be published. That was the hardest part for me, to just sit on the music. Mm. But
music inspired in part by your time here in North Carolina. I want to play a little bit from the new album. And this is a song called My Love Is a Mountain. And, of course, influenced by, I think, some of your time here in North Carolina. Let's listen to some of it.
A diamond in the cold, but no one could find.
A little bit of My Love Is a Mountain from Alina Simone's latest record, Make Your Own Danger. Where's the North Carolina in that?
Well, that was sort of my attempt at a modern day mining song. So it was played on a strum stick. I was playing the strum stick, which is like an Appalachian dulcimer, like a lap. Lap guitar. What are they called?
Dobro? Not a dobro,
no.
But the dulcimer?
Yeah, like a lap dulcimer. Yeah. And so it's sort of like a guitar-shaped version of that. And, you know, so and my drummer at the time also is from North Carolina, John Lynch from Carrboro. He lived down the street from me. And so for percussion, he just did this real chain gang kind of, I think he was just literally hitting like a saw or something against a metal pipe in the studio. So, you know, that was definitely influenced by my time here. I just got really into Appalachian music and folk music in general.
And so, you've been very intentional about picking up sounds, particularly from your home. As you said, you left when you were a year and a half. Your last album was covers by the musician Yanka, who was born in the Soviet Union, born and died in the Soviet Union, but a young punk artist. Yes. How much does that still influence your music? Do you feel yourself keeping all of those old, the kind of Russian influence as part of your music as you move forward?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think that that album, covering those Soviet punk songs, I was trying to really reinterpret them. I didn't just want to re-sing them the same way she did. And her style was very bare bones and unadorned. And so I went the opposite direction and tried to make it much more orchestral and arranged. And I hadn't done that before, you know, worked with a horn player and, you know, it had a lot of strings and stuff like that. And so I feel like I kept that, and that carried over to this album, because there are songs on there that are very lush and have, you know, layers and layers upon layers of instrumentals. And that was definitely something that I learned doing that previous album of covers.
Well, all of this and you're a new mother.
Yes. Most importantly.
Most importantly. And it's all part. And if we could have the baby crying on, we would do that too. And then you get the full range of Alina Simone's work. Alina, so great to have you. Thanks so much for joining
us. Thank you.
Alina Simone has a new album called Make Your Own Danger. Her new book is called You Must Go and Win. She's going to be at Quail Ridge Books and Music in Raleigh tonight at 7:30. Also performing in Charlotte on Friday and in Wilmington on Saturday. For more information, visit alinasimone.com. You spell Alina, A-L-I-N-A. Thanks for listening. You can visit us at thestateofthings.org. Find us on Facebook as well. Our program is produced by Amber Nimix and Alex Granados. Jenny Mueller's our intern. Robin Copley's the technical director. Managing editor Lindsay Foster Thomas. Susan Davis is our senior producer. And this is North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.